You're listening to podcasts from the Congressional Internet Caucus Advisory Committee, www.netcaucus.org.
Patents, a look ahead to the future. Moderator was Steven Pinkos, Deputy Director of the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. Panelists included Aaron Cooper, Senate Judiciary Committee, Amy Levine, Congressman Rick Boucher, Brandon Ritchie, Congressman Bob Goodlatte, and Ryan Triplett, Senate Judiciary Committee.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Okay.
Let's go ahead and get started. As I understand, we're on a fairly tight timetable. I'm Steve Pinkos. I'm the Deputy Director of the United States Patent and Trademark Office and Deputy Undersecretary of Commerce for Intellectual Property. It's quite a mouthful. It's very expensive business cards. But we're here this afternoon to have a discussion regarding patents and patent law and patent legislation and a look ahead to the future, or at least the future as to what this year may bring, in particular on Capitol Hill. And I'd like to introduce my fellow panelists, Aaron Cooper from Senate Judiciary Committee, working for Senator Leahy, and Amy Levine from Congressman Boucher's office, Brandon Ritchie from Congressman Goodlatte's office, Ryan Triplett, also from the Senate Judiciary Committee, working for Senator Spector. So we've assembled an all-star cast here to speak about these issues, and their bosses are very deeply involved in intellectual property issues and specifically patent issues. I'll start with a little bit of an introduction from the executive branch perspective, from the Patent and Trademark Office, since that's all we do over there. That's all we do is intellectual property. They all have to balance many other issues. But from our perspective within the administration, we think there's a wide consensus in the United States that our intellectual property system has worked well for 220 years. It's a widely held view, not a consensus, but a widely held view. And in fact, intellectual property protection, patent protection is embedded in our Constitution. One of the first acts of Congress was to pass a patent legislation, and for 220 years, we've had probably the greatest economic success story the world has ever seen. We've been the bastion of innovation, and one primary reason of that is the incentive that the patent system provides for people to innovate and create and then seek monetization of their inventions. And what we've seen recently is continued increases in the number of applications that are coming into the Patent and Trademark Office. And to the extent that we had over 440,000 patent applications filed last year in our office, we issued over 165,000 patents, and that's despite the fact that our allowance rate was 54%, which is the lowest in 30 years, and we are expending a lot of energy and resources on the quality initiatives that I think have led to a lower allowance rates. We've been hiring at a record pace, over 1,000 examiners a year the last 2 years, and probably this year and into the foreseeable future. So there's a very much a demand for the office to be extremely productive, but quality is a very important issue, and that has led to the part of the debate regarding patent legislation, I think, to a large extent about litigation. And there seems to be increased concern about patent litigation in the United States and how that should be handled. I think the numbers show that there's not necessarily a large increase in the litigation, but certainly there's a large increase in those that are concerned about patent litigation and the threat, importantly, of litigation. So I think that these panelists are well positioned to talk about that. We at the office are interested in what Congress is doing, of course, and we have certain thoughts about where legislation should go, and of course, at certain points in the process, we were consulted. I anticipate there may be hearings upcoming. There were, of course, in the last Congress, but the office is very interested in proposals that create more collaboration between the office and the applicant and the public. We don't have as much control over what happens in the courts, of course, but what we can do is try to do the best job possible up front so that if a patent leaves the office, that it's really worth the paper that it's transcribed on and that it's there's greater certainty about that particular patent. So we think that greater third-party submissions to the office would be helpful, more information flowing from the applicant, and that gets into an issue of inequitable conduct that some folks may be interested in, we could talk about later. But those are the types of things that it would be helpful on the front end, and of course on the back end, before we get to litigation, there's been a lot of talk about post-grant opposition procedure, which could obviate some of the need for expensive litigation, and the office has been engaged with the Hill, and the administration has been on those issues. So, and as well as international efforts to try to create work sharing between the other biggest offices in the world, I think that's an important aspect of the work that the PTO does, and I know the Hill's been very interested in us, not just on the administrative side, but then when we get into the enforcement side and helping American companies protect their intellectual property abroad. So at this time, I think I would just like to pose a general question to our panelists so you can get their perspective on pending patent legislation or soon-to-be pending patent legislation. And that's, in their views, how high is the congressional interest in patent legislation this year? And if it is high or relatively high, what is driving that interest? And Aaron, why don't we start with you?
Thank you. I'm Aaron Cooper with Senator Leahy. I would say two things. First of all, the interest is very high. And second of all, none of this works without the very hard work of the Patent Office. If the Patent Office isn't working hard, the whole system doesn't work, regardless of what legislation we pass. I think
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Checks in the mail.
I think patent panels generally attract a relatively niche audience. The discussion between whether to have a first-to-invent or a first-to-file process or whether there are interlocutory appeals for a Markman hearing aren't the kinds of issues that you generally hear debated on ABC News or the O'Reilly Factor for others here. But the IP industry in the United States drives our economy, and we need to have a patent system that is cognizant of that, that is efficient and effective for 21st century technologies. And we do see some areas that need improvement legislatively. Last year, as a lot of you know, Senator Leahy made a commitment to the chairman of the IP subcommittee in the Senate, Senator Hatch, to work together on legislation, introduce legislation that would bring the patent system into the 21st century. And we worked very hard on that. We were able to come together with some compromises to come up with a piece of legislation, which was S-3818, that represents where Senator Hatch and Senator Leahy see the patent reform debate going. We understood, Senator Leahy and Senator Hatch both said when they introduced the legislation that in the rush to get it ready, to make sure that we could set down on a piece of paper what our priorities were so the people, the affected parties could comment on it, there were going to be some things that that still needed to be ironed out. We recognize some of the cross-references are off and things like that. And we're working through that process, but we are very committed to seeing patent reform happen in this Congress.
Thank you very much. Amy?
I would agree with Aaron that interest in enacting patent reform legislation in this Congress is very high. The new chairman of the IP subcommittee of the House Judiciary Committee is Howard Berman, and he and my boss, Congressman Boucher, have worked very closely together for the last 5 years on patent reform measures. They introduced bills, and the latter is at the top of the subcommittee's agenda. In the last Congress, there was a lot of work in the House toward coming up with a comprehensive patent reform measure. There was a bipartisan measure introduced by Chairman Lamar Smith that my boss and Brandon's boss and a number of other members worked on, and unfortunately, we weren't able to get that legislation moved. But I think now you will see real... Mr. Boucher takes the same position as what Stephen said earlier, that a patent needs to be worth the quality of the paper that's written on. You know, it needs to have meaning, and we need to enact reform both on the patent quality side to assist the patent office with ensuring that the patents that get granted are, in fact, inventions that are worthy of the patent, And also on the litigation side to make some changes to the system. And so I think you should expect to see movement on patent legislation this year.
Okay, thanks, Amy. Brandon?
Going to agree with all that's been said so far. I think there's a strong appetite to take up patent legislation this year. We moved the ball pretty far. We had some great hearings and discussion basis in the House in the IP subcommittee, and we're looking forward to doing that again this time. I think what's and also I'll take this time to say we look forward to working with the PTO to the extent that we can solve some of these problems through rules over there. And applaud the work that you guys have been doing over there. I'd say that the key force driving this, I think, is certainty. I think businesses need certainty. They, like Amy said, it's enforceable. And certainty with regard to the rules of engagement, if there is a dispute later on after these patents have been granted. So I would say certainty is driving certainty from businesses. And with complex products and a complex economy, perhaps the time is right now to look into our patent laws to make sure that they are up to date.
And that's a great point, I think, about certainty. We hear it quite often ourselves. Recently talking with a company that is a medical device startup, and they're trying to raise venture capital, and the likely success of their company is going to be very dependent on their new technology and the patents they may get that are pending. And the venture capitalists hired a very reputable law firm to do their own essentially independent examination of these patent applications to try to determine the likelihood of the patents issuing and the likely strength of the patents. So that certainty plays a role even before they're issued. It's quite interesting. So thanks, Brandon. Ryan?
Pulling up the rear here, so echoing a lot of the same statements that were made before. This is Senator Spector's number one intellectual property priority, and it's one of his top three overall priorities. With next to asbestos, it's right up there. We were not at the negotiating table with Senators Hatch and Leahy last year, so we are not as wedded to the S-3818, but we definitely agree with a lot of the fundamental concepts that were presented in the bill. Do have kind of some feedback and some input that we will put into the process as we proceed this Congress. But we look forward to working with Senator Leahy's office as we do that. Really do believe this is something that can get done this Congress. What's motivating our office is the impact that any reform will have on not just our nation's economy, but we're very cognizant of the fact that whatever we do will be copied, and it won't be copied by Brazil, and their motives in changing their patent system won't be the same as ours. So we're trying to make sure that any reforms that we do strengthen patents and don't potentially undermine patent holders' rights.
If I could just echo one thing that Ryan said, there are a lot of issues on the House Judiciary and the Senate Judiciary Committee that divide along partisan lines fairly neatly. And one of the really nice things about working on this issue is that this is not one of them, that this is a bipartisan effort, that all of our offices work together very well on these issues. And so where there might be partisan splits on other issues, it's not true here, and makes it much easier for all of us to work together to come to a consensus on legislation that we can then move.
That's encouraging to hear. So there's a better chance to reach consensus on this than asbestos legislation. I feel like I've been in Washington for 12 years, and asbestos was probably a front page or a third page article when I came here 12 years ago.
There's always a possibility. There's always that possibility.
I also worked on bankruptcy reform for 8 years, and I finally did. See,
case
there's
in point, case
light
in point.
At the end of the tunnel. Exactly. Well, I know this is always hard to predict, but does anybody want to venture an opinion about the timing of action, or gearing up for maybe at least, are we thinking hearings again? I know the House side had several last Congress, and I certainly know, having worked on the House Judiciary Committee, that you can never predict what the schedule will be. But if you wanted to, talk about a range, or if you've heard any rumblings.
I'll say from the Senate Judiciary side, we are working very actively on the legislation from Senator Leahy's perspective, based on what was introduced last year as the structure of what we would do this year. And it is similar to what Ryan said about Senator Spector's office. It is Senator Leahy's top legislative IP priority. And I think in the next several months, I expect to see it introduced. We did hold a number of hearings last year, so I think that will be limited this time around. I think that what happened last year was very productive in that it got everybody talking. We got a piece of legislation out there so that people could comment on it, and now we're ready to move forward.
Yeah. In the House, Mr. Berman has expressed an interest, and Mr. Boucher agrees with him, in working with the Senate to try to come up with a single version of a bill that could move through both the House and the Senate. The amount of time spent speaking with the offices of the committee staff and Mr. Hatch and Mr. Leahy and Mr. Spector, I would expect a few, some hearings in the House. But again, I think this is a top priority for the subcommittee and will move fairly quickly.
Brandon, you know that?
I think that we're all cognizant of what lies ahead, and what lies ahead is the ominous 2008 elections. And once we enter that, is anything moving forward in that kind of environment kind of becomes a target. And so to make sure that something gets done well and clean, there's a hope that it's done earlier rather than later.
Well, and it's really, Amy mentioned something that's very intriguing, which is bicameral cooperation before introduction or immediately maybe after introduction, which is something that oftentimes doesn't occur. But if there could be some similarity, or more than some similarity, that would probably certainly bode well for a potential enactment. Work out some of those issues at the beginning. Are there any? Would anyone want to comment on an issue or two under the rubric of patent legislation that you think may be some of the more, maybe the most difficult to tackle? Anything in particular? I mentioned post-grant review. There's the issue of inequitable conduct. First to file, I think, was mentioned. Would anybody care to talk about any of those specific issues?
Well, I think the Supreme Court knocked off one of the most controversial issues last year in the eBay case when it decided that injunctions should not automatically issue in patent cases. That was something that was under consideration in the House, and the Supreme Court decision means that we don't really need to fight over that anymore because it's been resolved. But yeah, I think probably whether a post-grant opposition proceeding should have one window that applies for a certain period of time after a patent application is granted, or whether there should also be a second window which applies once a company receives a notice of infringement.
Or a sliding glass door. I don't know if that would make things easy for us. Any other issue that you see? What about first to file? Is that something that you think will be part of any legislation?
Well, I've been pretty confident it will be part of any legislation because it was part of the legislation last year. I think that there are, the one thing that I've learned in doing this, there are no issues where nobody has a comment one way or the other, that the interests are so diverse and intertwined that we receive a lot of comments on pretty much everything in the legislation. So I think that we were certainly going to be talking to both our Republican colleagues in the Senate and both sides in the House, because we all have an interest in getting patent reform done. There's an amendment process in the Senate, and that's probably going to take a lot of our time, and we're not sure how that's going to work out yet.
Well, if the 1999 debate over the AIPLA was any indication, there's issues like first to file and publication. Sometimes they don't manifest themselves as a hindrance to passage until later in the game. But I think it's on everybody's radar screen now after what happened what happened back then. And it's funny, It's funny the passions that can be inflamed over intellectual property. It's always been evident in the copyright world, I guess. But that lesson from 99, I think, surprised. I remember Henry Hyde back at the time, I think, was shocked over the tone that the debate took on the floor and how fired up people got over it. So I think that's likely to occur again over certain issues. But as you mentioned, there seems to be bipartisan consensus that the system can be perfected or the system can be improved upon. And Ryan, you made a very interesting comment, too, is to the fact that others around the world are watching what we do. And we at the Patent and Trademark Office have experienced that in some of our trips abroad where people have asked us questions at the very, somehow they got a hold of the Lamar Smith draft, it wasn't even introduced, and people in Japan and elsewhere were asking us about that. And I got a question about it in Vietnam a year ago. So it's people certainly do watch because we, the U.S. government, go around the world trying to convince people that a system similar to ours is the best for many countries and it's best promoting economic growth globally. So they are paying close attention. And when we do things that are viewed as restricting rights, a lot of people say, well, see, we were actually right. Your system shouldn't be as broad. So it's an interesting dynamic globally on these issues.
I would just echo that by saying that getting it right is very important. This is, like I was saying at the outset, this is not an issue that you hear debated in the mainstream press very often. We have 20 presidential candidates right now, and I don't think any of them are talking about it. But getting it right is extremely important because it is a driver of our economy. And that's why it's helpful that it's a bipartisan effort, and that it's people taking it seriously to make sure that we have it right. And that's why it takes so long.
How about any questions from the audience for the panel?
Yes, sir.
Peter Harder, Homeless Ventures, playing off Aaron's last comment and to play devil's advocate that this is a bipartisan. People running for the White House are about health care. You'll complete the sentence from here. Big pharma, drug prices, patents on drugs. There was a protest in India against Novartis, a Swiss big pharma company, over anyone to cover this law. So, to the extent that people run to the White House in this country talk about healthcare, employing prices on drugs, and research for diseases that are not blockbusters, etc., would that make this not so polite a debate?
Helpful.
Not this time around.
It's an extremely important issue, and we hear from the affected communities very, 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 very often. But I don't. From what I've seen so far, it doesn't affect the tone of the debate. At least at this point, we haven't gone to mark. We had it on the markup agenda last year, but we haven't gone to markup. So we'll see if it lasts. But I think that those of us that have been working on it, I think we'd all say that we've been working on it on a bipartisan basis, and that hasn't changed.
I don't think that we're necessarily expecting a polite debate here, but also kind of reiterating the experience of all of our bosses. They're well-seasoned legislators, and they've gone through more contentious debates before, and this is something, when something's truly a priority, I think there is that ability to knuckle down and really kind of see. So there's a hope that would be the same case here.
I think in the last Congress, you saw, particularly in the House, a breakdown of the discussions over the Smith bill. Basically became a breakdown over what bio and pharma wanted and what the tech industry wanted. And tech industry is also, I think, probably a little bit overbroad because there are some tech companies that are primarily licensors of technology and holders of patents that take a slightly different view. But essentially, in the House, these companies make products that have a very small number of patents in them, and they rely on exploiting those patents to generate the money that they plow back into the research and development to develop new drugs and treatments. And I think we would all agree that that's a good thing. On the tech side, you have companies that tend to put a lot of different pieces of patented material into a product. And so if there's an allegation of infringement of one of maybe 20 or 30 or even 100 patents, it can hold up a product that can be very important. There was the potential for the shutdown of BlackBerry service because BlackBerry had been found to have infringed several patents. And so you do have different companies with different business models, and that does make it sometimes a little bit difficult to mediate and find common ground. I think one difference you may see, at least in the House in this Congress, is that in the 109th Congress, my understanding is that the Judiciary Committee had been it, and that put the companies that were less inclined to support reform in a position where they could just keep anything from happening. And I don't think you will see quite the same dynamic in the 110th Congress.
But I should distinguish bipartisanship from consensus. We understand there's not a consensus. There's bipartisanship on it.
And Peter, I think also it's a very good question from the standpoint of, do the pricing debates and things along those lines and access to medicines somehow bleed into this debate? Because they are somewhat separate. There's not, unlike in India and other parts of the world, there's a widely held belief here in the United States that the patent system has worked well for the pharmaceutical industry. We have the best pharmaceutical industry in the world. We all have better, greater life expectancy because of it. But there's also debates about, how the government should be involved in distributing those medicines or paying for those medicines. But the core value of companies being able to get patents for that, I think, is shared by most of the people on the Hill.
And I would just add, too, that something Amy said made me think of this. But, again, the fact that there are products out there that have hundreds and even in the thousands of patented components just begs the question, don't we need to take a look at this, at these in America's history?
Yes.
Well, last year, Senator Hatch was chairman of the IP subcommittee, and we don't have that subcommittee anymore, in part because at some point Senator Hatch was considering not staying on the committee, and so that's changed the dynamic a little bit. With Senator Leahy having been ranking member of the subcommittee and the full committee, it made sense to bring it up to the full committee level, and that that just gives us two Republican partners to work with. But we did. There are a number of IP issues that Senator Hatch and Senator Leahy worked very closely on last year. And we are hoping to continue to be able to work closely together and expect to work closely together in introducing legislation this year. But we also have Senator Spector as a ranking member of the committee, which is important both because that's where IP issues are done now and because that's where full committee issues are done now. And so we're going to be working with them. We don't have we don't have a new draft to be discussing at this point. The structure of what Senator Leahy plans to introduce is the structure that was in 3818. We understand there will be some minor changes to it, and those are the kind of things that we're working through. And then we will speak with Senator Spector's staff to see whether they are interested in the hopes that we can come up with something that we can all agree on.
Thing that I mean, I've had instructions from my boss that we are going to be working very closely with Senator Leahy's staff. We haven't received language from them yet, but I would expect that when their office is ready to, I understand that they have initial agreements with Senator Hatch's office. So once they have those conversations and come to us, we will, of course, entertain any and every option. It truly is a hope. I don't think that it's very easy for ego to get tied up in a lot of these sorts of issues, but it would. be ideal if you had a bill that came out of committee that had the majority of the members of the committee on it. Hard to say what the process will be in a couple months from now.
I'm not sure that there are any IP issues that we don't talk about. But the process, same thing when Senator Spector was chairman, and same thing now. There are no IP issues that are, I shouldn't say, it should never be that categorical. I don't think there are IP issues that are that partisan, and so we always speak about all these issues.
Yeah, I think that it's more of a, we'll just see how the process unfolds right now, but our offices on these issues are very close.
Any additional questions? Yes, sir, in the back.
Bob Sanmore, State University Association. You mentioned, obviously, many of the things you expect to be involved. You mentioned Mr. Smith. Any other?
Well, the bipartisan sponsors of the Smith bill last year in the House were Mr. Cannon. I'm trying to think if there's anyone else, but I wouldn't want to speak for their offices, but I would think that they remain interested in the issue and would probably want to be engaged in the process.
Probably Mr. Coble will get involved this Congress, more so than last Congress, I would imagine, on the House side.
Yes.
I'd imagine on the opportunity. And I would also expect Senator Sessions.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Roger, Computer Communications Industry Association. Zane Levine mentioned they're applied maybe the same, yet the net impact is very different. And the impact of good and bad patents alike is very different. Given the expansion of patentable subject matter we've seen in the last 50 years, might it make sense, as anyone on the Hill, contemplate rules for different types of patentable subject matter?
Amy might want to comment on that. Not to put you on the spot. We had a meeting with Mr. Boucher recently, and he is interested in a known business method patents, but I don't want to characterize where he would want to take that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's a couple of ways to come at the question. One is, I think there was some discussion in the last Congress, and maybe it even was discussed at a hearing, about whether there should perhaps be different types of patents for biopharma versus tech products, or whether we should think about doing something like that. I am not sure I'm interested in the issue of business method patents, which was actually kind of what brought he and Mr. Berman together on the patent reform issue in the first place about 5 years ago, was concern about patents that were being granted for practices such as the Priceline reverse auction, the Amazon shopping cart. Mr. Boucher was concerned that a patent shouldn't issue for a process that was done on the internet just because it had been around for a very long time. Maybe it's not the best idea to allow a patent for a reverse auction process on the internet just because what makes it new is it's being done on the internet. He was somewhat intrigued by a column that ran in the New York Times. It was probably now 2 or 3 months ago, that discussed some patents that had been granted on tax strategies. And what that meant for people filing their taxes and companies that help people file their taxes. And, you know, if a company gets a patent on a tax shelter, they then potentially could be licensing that to other people to teach them, so that they're interested in the topic again. And it is something he's been exploring, just and has been having some discussions with the patent office about, just to try to get a sense of, you know, what is a business method patent, which is, you know, it is very hard to define what constitutes a business method patent. There is a category of patents at the patent office that are technically business method patents, but there are patents that could fall into other categories that some people might consider business method patents. There's a related issue of software patents, and should we be granting software patents, and how does that interplay with copyright for software? So it raises a whole host of very complicated issues. He's been having some very good about what they've been doing, because they've instituted some procedures to try to do a second look at some business method patents, and to have been very conscientious about a lot of these patents. So it is kind of an ongoing discussion.
Thank you. I didn't mean to put you on the spot for that. Anybody else want to comment on that question? I was just going to say that it's also not just the laws as passed by Congress that speak to what's patentable subject matter, but of course how those laws are interpreted by the Federal Circuit and the Supreme Court. And I think there's some indication that the Supreme Court is more inclined to question some of the decisions that have doctrines that have come from the Federal Circuit. Really, it's what happened in the eBay case, and they said that, you know, go back and actually apply it. This four-part test is on the books. Go back and apply it. And we're, again, starting to see some interesting results from that as district courts feel a little, I guess, a little more liberated. And along those same lines, the KSR case that the Supreme Court heard, I believe, in November, decisions expected in the next couple of months, which could liberate the office to a certain extent in rejecting patent applications on obviousness grounds. Sometimes, and I know we get a little defensive about this because there are bad patents that come out of the office that somebody made an error on, no question. There are other bad patents, quote-unquote bad patents, or patents that are criticized in the press that are perfectly valid patents under the current law, and they may seem ridiculous to a certain extent, but you know, if there was not that actual teaching or suggestion from prior art to make that obviousness rejection, based on the current case law from the Federal Circuit, we can't do it. So our folks are just applying the law as they're obligated to do. So in some of those cases, that's the result that occurred. So I think that the KSR case could, it's not going to obviously eliminate categories of subjects that are patentable, but it'll give the office, I believe, if it comes down the right way, a little more freedom to apply, for examiners to apply their skills in the art.
The Supreme Court has obviously become much more active in this area than they have been in the recent past, and looking at some of the decisions from the Federal Circuit, and I think that's a healthy part of a good national discussion on patent issues, because the Supreme Court is addressing some of them, and it's a good dialogue. It helps the dialogue with Congress.
And I just mentioned too, in the House, Congressman Issa has introduced a bill to kind of help to make these court decisions a little more consistent, and that's a pilot program that, and then potentially some of the cases could be referred if they are assigned to other judges. That could help. That pilot program, I think, passed the House last Congress, or I think it passed the House, and but it didn't make it through the Senate. But it's another component in addition to all these other reforms to try to have consistency coming out of the federal circuits.
Would that allow every judge in Marshall, Texas to elect the city patent cases, or is still some criminal? That's a very interesting concept in that bill, and creating, you know, some more specialists out there. Any further questions?
Yes. Jonathan Zook from the Association for Competitive Technology. And I guess I want to follow up on your statement at the tail end there about we're just applying the law, and that are very concerned about substantive patent law reform. But that's very much provoked by things like patents for putting a dot on a map on the internet and things like that. And so is there something legislatively that should happen on obviousness, or is it all something that should be happening through the courts so that that issue can be adjudicated and decided in a non-substantive way so that we can really try to decide?
Would any of you like to comment on? I mean, certainly Congress can define anything they choose to define. It's, you know, the basic legislative drafting is the more complicated and specific the definition, the more difficult the task. And but Congress, certainly we think that the court decision, if it comes down the right way, as the government's brief has advocated, I think would clarify what the actual statute currently means, not as what the Federal Circuit's interpreted it to mean. But I don't know, obviously, if you all, have you heard about a desire to craft a new statute on obviousness?
I have not heard anything about anybody actively doing that. I will say in the course of the kind of general discussions my boss has had about business method patents, one possible solution that's been proposed is to redefine obviousness or clarify the definition of obviousness. And that, you know, that's just one way to approach the issue if people wanted a legislative solution to it. But I'm not aware of anybody who's really pushing to redefine. People might want to wait and see how that comes down.
Yes, Rich.
Jeremy Peel, I'm over here from the Confederation of British Industry, and we've just had in the UK a review of the life gouging. One of the things that patent harvesting and patent trolls, I know this sort of, in, to a certain extent, still in early days of this, but do you see, does that come up an issue politically for you?
Well, we had a hearing on it in the House last Congress, so I'd say yes. It's in that and then defining what legitimate is. I mean, this is a tough issue, but you know, nobody wants to block the small inventor who has a patent and he wants to have the exclusive right to use it. It goes from that end of the spectrum to people who clearly abuse that right. So that has been a political discussion that's been pretty fiery, I'd say.
I think there's definitely the quote-unquote patent trolls and patent speculators. There's always kind of considered that when it comes to patent trolls, I think that those kind of problems would actually be more appropriately solved with increased patent quality, addressing it through the patent quality aspect than anything else.
Yes?
Jim DeLong, Progress and Freedom Foundation. One suggestion that I've heard several times from people putting together products that use dozens or hundreds of patents. And I've also heard presentations from people who say they're working on search databases. Is USPTO doing this? You know, the idea of simply developing better ways to find patents, index them, get the claims more, improving the information systems might be a need for a lot of extra second windows and third windows.
Yes.
And if you come up with that system, will you patent it?
Well, first of all, it's amazing to me, having not been at the PTO for a long time, but that it's just been in the last couple of years where most of the information is available online through public PAIR, information on prior patents and pending patents past the date of publication. So the amount of information that is available has increased exponentially. We do share through our public search room and through our patent depository libraries around the country the databases and the skills that folks can use, and we teach the skills to use to search. Having said that, and also the fact that just last year did we really implement an electronic filing system that's been embraced by the private sector, and by next month we will receive 50% of our patent applications online or electronically. A year ago that was about 2%. So we are working to improve our systems, and we are trying to think big, and just, you know, obviously there's some amazing things being done with search technologies. We've had conversations with people about that. And we also think that we can utilize technology to improve this public participation that I talked about in the opening. And there's this model, pilot program we're running with New York University, sort of a wiki model where people are volunteering to put their patents up there for peer review. And it's going to settle on 5 or 6 best pieces of art that will then be submitted to the examiner through a public participation process.
Well, one place where I think it might be worthwhile for congressional hearings would be in this whole between improvements in searches and databases and perhaps the elimination of need for more procedures.
Yeah,
you know, lawyers are always going to say, oh, you need another set of hearings. We need cross-examination, too.
The major pieces of patent legislation introduced in the 109th Congress, the Smith Bill, Berman Boucher, the Hatch-Leahy, had an 18-month publication requirement for all patents. And, you know, I think it's IBM has started publishing all of their patents online, which I think is a great effort and something that it would be really nice to see other companies picking up on. And so to see that kind of initiative by industry is also very encouraging.
Did you want to say something, Aaron?
No. Yeah.
I think we have time for one more question, if there is one. Well, if not, thank you very much for your attention. Thanks. Thanks, of course, to all the panelists. They work for bosses who are very smart, energetic, and know this issue. And the last session on international policy perspectives will be in this room beginning at 3:30, just in a moment. Thank you.